from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, ever wondered what your cat does when you're not around? Author Carolyn Paul was gripped by that question after her anxious and timid cat Tibby disappeared for several weeks, only to return fat, happy, and confident. So Paul and her partner, illustrator Wendy McNaughton, took the logical next step. They strapped a GPS and camera on Tibby to sniff out his secret second life. Paul and McNaughton join Forum to discuss their book, Lost Cat. We'll also talk with them about firefighting, homemade flying machines, drawing people, and much more. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Artist, illustrator, and graphic journalist Wendy McNaughton and novelist and former veteran firefighter Carolyn Paul join us in the studio for this morning's second Forum Hour. Together they published a book called Lost Cat, A True Story of Love, Desperation, and GPS Technology. Wendy McNaughton's drawings have appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Lucky Peach, and print, and her illustrated documentary series Meanwhile appears on The Rumpus. Caroline Paul is the author of East Wind Rain, a historical novel, and the memoir Fighting Fire, and pleased to have you both with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on.
Well, we're going to start off talking about cats. I said we were going to talk about lots of other things because these are women of many colors and versatile in many ways, and I want listeners to find out all about the activities they are involved in, which are many to be sure, but let's talk about the lost cat story first. I mean, in fact, it's brought on lots of people from that cat feline loving world into your lives, I imagine. The story is, tell us the story, Caroline.
The story begins with a plane crash. Specifically, I crashed.
Not a real plane, actually, was it?
Some people, my mother doesn't call it a real plane. It's called an experimental plane. It's basically a hang glider with a go-kart underneath it. And I crashed it, unfortunately, and I was sent to the hospital, and my head was stitched up, no brain damage, they said, bandage for my arm, and emergency surgery for my ankle. And then I was sent home to recuperate after I'd stabilized, and I promptly fell into a very deep depression. I think most people would, probably. I was immobile on the couch.
A lot of meds, too, yeah?
Yes, and pumped up on a lot of painkillers.
So you got a cat.
Well, I had a cat. I actually had two cats. Had them for 13 years.
I mean, you got a cat to comfort you in this.
Oh, yeah. Stage. Yeah. Yeah. They were the longest relationship of my adult life. And I think they, at the time, they were sort of in my addled state. They represented that I had had a normal life before this bad injury and that I would have one after.
Yeah, in fact, the book starts out with a great opening line. One day I was in a plane crash. That's a great lead. But you take us to the fact that your cat, well, abandoned you, left, went on an adventure, whatever, and there you are suffering maybe even more without your cat. Cat comes back. Cat returns 5.5 weeks later.
Cat returns 5.5 weeks later, and he was my shy and skittish cat. He was the one that I was sure could not survive the urban jungle. And he came back and he was fine.
Which is, you know, a nice ending to the story, but it doesn't end there. The story continues because I mentioned before we went in there, I had a cat named Onyx that went away for 6.5 weeks in return. And people love telling stories about their cats and how their cats, you know, drop a rat in front door and all these kinds of things that are sort of enigmatic cat behavior, but you both kind of were seeking answers to that enigmatic cat behavior. Where was our cat? What did our cat do during the time it was away, right?
Well, I was seeking answers. I think Wendy, who was my partner,
I was supporting Caroline in seeking her answers.
Right. And also doing the illustrations for the book, which are something to marvel at in their own right. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you started going through all these gyrations about finding out what kind of a life this cat was living away from you, and that's really something you can't find out ever.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, it's ostensibly a story about a cat, but it's kind of a story about all relationships and how we think we know this creature that we love. Whether, in my case, it was a cat, but it was also a relationship. I mean, Wendy and I were together. We were new, and I think we all sort of delude ourselves into thinking we know the person we love so well. And so when my cat disappeared and then came back fat, I was shocked. And my world already turned upside down, already highly medicated, sort of turned again. And I thought, I don't know my own cat. And so I set out on a quest to figure out where he had been, as if that would answer that question.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I know we're going to hear from a lot of listeners in this, and I'm going to tell a story about a cat that I'm a dog guy. I mean, it's full frontal. I'm a dog guy, and there it is. Full disclosure. But the fact of the matter, and I think there really are dog people and cat people, but I've had cats. And I had a cat who had never been downstairs, was living in a room we had upstairs. And clearly the cat was dying, came after many years downstairs and then died, I mean, to say goodbye. And those kinds of stories, you know, especially cat lovers really, I mean, see the facial expressions you two are having, but we don't understand. I mean, we don't understand the people we're in relationships with and what their lives are, as you say. You make that really good analogy.
We don't understand cat behavior. We try to understand. And I think humans, most of us think we do understand. See, that's the point, is that I think we actually do think we know our animals really well. And so when he surprised me so much, we went on our quest and we thought we could find that answer. And we used...
Yeah, Caroline used every mode of technology and otherwise that she could to try and figure out what was going on inside the mind of her cat. Everything from GPS to cameras to animal communications classes where she would actually learn to speak cat and private
speak the feline tongue.
Yes.
And you also had psychic involved in this process too?
Yeah, I consulted a psychic actually when he had disappeared. I think a lot of people do this. And she was great. I mean, she was like, he's going to be back Thursday when the full moon is waning. And I believed her. And, you know, the truth is, Maybe he was back. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
She could have been right on.
But I never saw him.
But you're anthropomorphizing. That's what you're really doing with this cat, making this cat into – I mean, but again, the behavior is so enigmatic. I'm having free association here. I remember a former colleague of mine who had a cat who every time he would get involved sexually with a woman, the cat would jump up and defecate.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, you hear all these kinds of stories. I mean, cat behavior.
Mother-in-laws do that too. I think it's right. We approve or disapprove of our loved ones' partners in our own ways. I think cats are really smart.
Well, let's go back to the GPS part of the story, though. It's in your title and everything. I mean, what did you expect to find, or what did you hope to find?
Well, it was funny. You know, I'd been calling him for 5.5 weeks every night, tearfully, until my neighbors hated me. And so I was sure that he was far, far away. And in some ways, I wanted him to be far, far away because that meant he hadn't heard me and wasn't coming home. But I also wanted him to be close because that meant he was safe and, you know, making his own decisions.
So I think when Caroline initially put the GPS on him and then just pushed him out the door and said, go to wherever that hussy that you were seeing was, you know, I think she expected to have this pinpointed place on the other side of town, you know, that then we could go over and bang on their door and see what was up. But that's not at all.
You were looking for this tomcat to be cheating on you, essentially, or something along those lines.
Well, he was cheating on me.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
there's
no
question about
it. Find out who he was cheating with.
And
confront the hussy, to use Wendy's word here.
Yeah, our first GPS map, though, came back, and I really did think I'd just see one line from, you know, our house to the hussy, as you are calling her.
You were calling it a hussy?
Well, yeah.
How do you know your cat was a male cat, maybe like men?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is San Francisco, could have.
Yeah.
Very, very much. We didn't know. There was a feral cat colony, could have been there. I mean, we really didn't know. All we knew is that he had come back, and he was not the shy cat I had thought he was. He was the, as I say in the book, the swashbuckling adventurer.
People tell you you're over the top in this interest in your cat, don't they? That this is maybe intense where your pet is concerned, wanting to know your pet's behavior and all that. Or most of the cat people who talk to you say, I'm with you, girl, or something along those lines.
I have never noticed anyone thinking I'm crazy. What do you think?
No, I didn't say crazy. I said over the top.
I would never say that.
Wendy actually did in this quest. She hadn't been a pet person before we got together. And so I think she was basically humoring me. I mean, I was in a really bad way. And I was in a very bad depression. And so when I said, we need to follow Tibby to wherever he's going, she said, okay, honey.
We should mention the cat's names are Tibby after tibula, which you one of your broken bones. And the other cat is fibula, which is also a bone that you broke in this plane crash?
Yeah, it was coincidental that I did break the tibia and the fibula. And so when I was in the hospital and they were sort of hovering around me saying, well, and explaining my situation, you have a very bad break of the tibia and the fibula. And in fact, the doctor, he said, he didn't say just that. He said, your ankle looks like those potato chip pieces at the bottom of the bag, the ones you have to... you get to by tipping the bag into your mouth. And
it's imaginative, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was excited about it, and he put my ankle back together. But the tibia and the fibula, and I said, oh, those are the names of my cats, and they just thought I was some nut on a gurney.
And a lot of pain medication.
So what did you learn about your cat through the GPS?
Well, he...
I mean, that you didn't know before.
When we got the GPS back, without giving too much away here, we were shocked at what we found. I mean, you think that your cat just goes outside and hangs out, you know, maybe stays close by, goes in and out a couple times. That cat traveled so far, so much, all over the place over the course of just, you know, a day. We were shocked, Floor.
But you read these stories. In fact, what's the Almanac record? About 130 miles or something along those lines? Cat dropped and they have a chip in it and they find out.
Well, yeah, we've actually been compiling those stories, those lost and found stories. And we've had stories from, telling it that the recent story that everybody knows about is the cat that actually got home after being lost 200 miles away and never having been to that place, was driven to that place on a holiday, escaped from the RV, and the distraught owners went home, and months later the cat came back.
Is this a Disney movie or something?
Yeah, right.
In the making.
Again, that's an enigma. How is it that birds are able to fly from one place to another? You know, I mean, in my
right. I mean,
they
don't know the GPS unit in cats. Yeah. The only thing we can do is affix our own. And
this was also a few years back. So now there's GPS that you can find for cats on the internet very easily. But, four years ago, I guess, when this was happening, we had to really do some hard research to try and find a GPS that we could fit on our cat. We hadn't heard about any of this before.
Well, this is a natural for you in collaboration in many respects. I mean, because you were getting more and more involved in the world of cats and are a veteran illustrator. So you're actually taking stories, as I understand it. You're going to the public library, for example, getting people's stories and then doing illustrations of them, talking to people in cafes, getting illustrations. So here you're able to combine your talents.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I do tend to draw whatever's kind of going on at the time. So I'm sure I was doing some sketching at the time of things. And so it was really fun to collaborate. We're both fans of each other's work as well as being in a relationship. So it was good to do it together.
And drawing is like a muscle for you, I heard you say. You just go into a cafe. In fact, you would do it all the time if you could.
Yeah, and luckily it's my job.
She's doing it right now, Michael.
Yeah.
Are you drawing me while we're talking
at this
here?
Moment.
Oh, shame on you. I've been drawn by other cartoonists and illustrators in my day, and there's yet one to please my vanity, but that's another story.
Oh, no pressure.
So how did this collaboration work? Tell us about it.
Well, it sort of evolved. I mean, I didn't set out to write a book. As I followed Tibby, trying to figure out where he'd been those 5 weeks, the interesting thing was is I kind of came out of my depression. It was like I traveled out into the world, even though I couldn't really leave my couch because I was following my cat. And I was so confused by all the painkillers and meds I was taking. And I was scared I would never write again. I mean, I'd already written two books. I had plans to write others. And Wendy suggested I keep a blog. And so I started a blog that only Wendy knew the address to. And that's how the notes were taken. I would just take notes every day. And eventually Wendy thought, well, this is a great story. It was years later. I mean, this happened years ago.
I should mention, KQED Arts visited Wendy McNaughton's studio to learn more about her approach to illustrated journalism. You can find the video of that visit on our website at kqed.org/forum. And you can also find in that video a little plaque that says, "May the bridges I burn light the way." Where does that come from?
Oh, that's one of my favorite quotes, actually not by myself, by an artist named Mike Montero, who's wonderful, and it's hanging in my studio. And it's a good reminder, I think, to just keep moving forward and stay the course.
No, I liked it. I wasn't familiar with it. And you were a firefighter for how many years?
13 and a half years here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Great.
And loved it from all accounts and from what I was able to at least glean.
Loved it. I mean, it really suited my personality. You know, I worked with great people and it was like an adventure every day. I mean, my day at the office was I'd, you know, birth a baby in the morning and go to a fire in the afternoon. I worked in the mission.
And you miss it?
I do, yeah. For a long time after I retired, I would listen to the sirens and sort of the hair would go back up on the back of my neck. And it was hard actually still living in San Francisco and hearing my sisters and brothers go out on calls.
No, when we decided to have you on the air, it occurred to me that we had done a program a number of months ago, not that long ago, with Sandra Cisneros and a local artist who also did a book about a cat. Did you know, are you familiar with that book about a
lost cat? Yeah, I actually
think
I heard her on, forum. She's great. I love her work. I actually haven't read that book, but our book was wrapped up by then.
Yeah, well, you didn't feel you were co-opted or hoped that you
know,
weren't co-opted.
You know, it's a weird zeitgeist. I mean, people are, not only are there lots of GPS units now on the market that are small enough for cats, which there were not when we first started this quest, but a lot of people seem to be doing it now.
And there's a kind of crazy zeitgeist going on right now, fueled by the internet in part, I believe.
The cat meme.
Yeah.
Yeah, with those cats with Hitler mustaches. I mean, there's been some really crazy and
crazy cats out
there.
Odd stuff. Well, I'm going to ask listeners to join this. And in fact, you may have, well, a cat story or for that matter, a dog story. We're talking about animal behavior here, mainly about cats. But I know that there are many cat lovers out there. And what do you think cats do when they get lost? And where do they go? And where do they travel? And what about your cat? It's going to be an hour really talking about animal behavior in general. We're also talking about some of the really fascinating work that both these women have done. In fact, I looked at some of your illustrations, I must confess, Wendy, of Barack and of Susan Sontag and of our own political junkie, and they're really quite good.
Thank you.
Quite good. I don't know if Joan Didion would be happy with hers, but...
Oh, I hope so.
Oh,
I'm
because
a big fan.
She also has that sense of vanity. And
oh, we all do a little bit,
yeah,
I think.
I hope it's just a little bit in my case. Maybe a little more. You know, Joan has a Hollywood background. But let me give out a phone number and invite you to join us. It's toll-free, and you can join us now at 866-733-6786. We do welcome your participation in this conversation and any questions or comments you might have. Again, you can join us now, and the toll-free number is 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways to join the program, by the way. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us, our Twitter handle at KQED Forum. And our guests will be part of Spring Fever, an evening of literature, music, and live radio, sponsored in part by KQED Pop, KQED's new pop culture blog. And the event will take place April 19th. It's free. More information, again, is posted on our website, kqed.org/forum. In the meantime, I know we'll hear a lot of cat stories. My only request or caveat is try to be as succinct as you can. I mean, some of these cat stories are like shaggy dog stories. I hate to use that analogy.
There's a lot to say about
cats.
Talk about some of the responses you've had to this book from cat lovers particularly.
Well, just last night we had a reading at Booksmith, and it was really lovely that somebody came who had just lost her cat and shared her story with us and said that it meant so much to her to, you know, connect with other cat lovers. I think it brings out a lot of stories and feelings in people.
Yeah, and cat people are nice people. I mean, I have we've been lucky enough to have some great reviews, but they're also super just generous reviews. It's been great. You know,
you got actually reviews that some people would die for. I mean, they've been very, very good reviews.
Yeah, but they're cats. I mean, I have to say that if you want to write a book, I have advice: cats or fires.
Well, I heard some young women joking recently about guys who like cats, as if somehow that is not masculine or that takes away from their the actual phrase I heard was, guys who like cats don't have any game.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that is their game.
I mean, well, maybe it is, or maybe, I mean, I guess the suggestion was maybe something metro about a guy with a cat, but I don't know. That's
a man with confidence, because dogs, come on, they love you no matter what. That's why people, hey, I'm not against dog people. I have fostered dogs. I love all animals, basically. But a man who loves a cat, that's a man.
And a woman who learned all the Western constellations as a girl. Now, that's I don't know if that's a man or a woman. That's a pretty extraordinary person and human being is what that is. Plus, you saw a UFO. I just had been reading about you in Siberia. What did you see?
Well, I was on I used to be a whitewater rafter, and I went on a Russian-American rafting expedition in Siberia, and
a woman of adventure is what you are. Amazing. I mean, firefighting and handmade planes. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Well, we were just on the bank of the river at night, and we're all in a circle doing what Russians do, which is basically playing the guitar around the fire and drinking some vodka. We were sort of halfway through our expedition, and someone suddenly said, look, the moon is flying, and this circular orb had just jumped up from the horizon, and that's when we all turned around. And it was really I'm a pilot. I've been flying since I was 18. We had all seen many flying objects in the sky, but this one, sort of our hair stood up on the back of our neck, and it was completely silent, and it went over us, and the Russians didn't blink. They had seen so many strange things. And, you know, a UFO is technically an unidentified flying object. So I'm not saying it was from otherworldly, but it gave us an otherworldly feeling. But, you know, it is Siberia, and the military does test a lot of things there.
Yeah. In fact, one would assume it probably was the military, but who knows? I mean,
who knows?
Like the psychic story you told. Who knows?
Who knows?
We're going to go to our calls here, and let's do that. Let's begin, in fact, with Dave from Sonoma. Dave, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I'm going to pull over so you don't get so much road noise. Several years ago, my then wife and I had a beautiful Russian blue cat who started to go missing for a day here and there, but then would return. And so we figured he was just spending time with someone else in the neighborhood. And he one day came back with a note tucked into his collar saying that his sort of adopted owner was going to be out of town, and could we watch him while she was gone? This was our own cat. She was helping us to catch it.
We call that chutzpah where I come from, yeah.
And also pointed out that he preferred tuna, which explained to us why he was spending time at her apartment and not ours.
You know, that's a great story. And we've heard a lot of stories like this. A friend of mine talked about her cat who would return often smelling of all these different things like watermelon chapstick, which she deduced was from the 12-year-old down the street. And we've heard stories also. I mean, I remember hearing a story from people about how there were suddenly lost cat poster signs all over the neighborhood for one cat from different people who thought they all owned that cat.
Mm-hmm. Dave, thank you for that story. And we're going to hear some more as we move along here. One other story I need to hear from you, Wendy McNaughton. Need to hear from you, Caroline, is you worked in radio?
I did. I actually...
What'd you do?
I worked for KPFA.
Oh.
Yeah. I was the morning news person. I was kind of terrible at it.
When was that?
In the 80s, after I graduated from Stanford as a communications major. So I had a dream, Michael, that I would be... But I realized I'm not that good at journalism. It's just too hard. It's difficult.
Thank you for that. We're going to continue. No. And in fact, we'll go to your calls. You can also email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, talking with the authors of Lost Cat, Wendy McNaughton and Caroline Paul. It's subtitled A True Story of Love, Desperation, and GPS Technology. And you're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with Caroline Paul, the author of Lost Cat, A True Story of Love, Desperation, and GPS Technology, and illustrator and partner Wendy McNaughton. And our guests, as I said, will be part of Spring Fever, an evening of literature, music, and live radio sponsored by KQED Pop. That's our new pop culture blog, and that event will take place on the 19th of April, and it's free, and more information is on our website, kqed.org/forum. Also on our website, KQED Arts, visited Wendy McNaughton's studio to learn more about her approach to illustrated journalism, and you can find a video of that visit on our website, again, kqed.org/forum. And I'm being urged from all kinds of quarters to ask our guests, and I've been shying away from this, to find out more about where their cat went and what their cat was specifically up to. And the reason I've been shying away from it is I don't want to spoil it, and they don't want to spoil it for those who may want to read the book. But give us a little more information about what you learned about the Odyssey of Tibby.
Well, like I said, we did put a lot of technology on his collar to figure out where he was going. And one of the biggest things I think we learned was that technology can't answer everything. I mean, we put a camera on his collar, and he'd come back with these photos of him simply sleeping all day. It was almost like he was kind of on to us by then.
Techno smart cat, you think?
Yeah.
Something along those lines?
A little bit of a Schrodinger's cat thing. As we were watching him, we definitely changed the experiment, I think.
Let me go to another caller, and that's you, Terry. Hi.
Hi. Hey, I have cats, and I have two cats named Ricky and Lucy that I fostered from being one day old till now they're about a year old. So Lucy liked to wander, and she started running off when she was pretty young, and she had a tag with her, not with my number on it. People would call me, and she'd come home. So one night, I was away. I was out of town, and my husband was home, and I was away from my cell phone. When I picked it up, there were like three or four phone calls from the Bay Area, and I listened to all the messages, and the first one said, I have your cat, Lucy, and she's so cute, and she's, you know, on Dracaena and Park, and I don't know what to do with her. So the next one was 20 minutes later, your cat's on another street, and she's really cute, and I don't know what to do with her. And then a third one was, your cat is on Piedmont Avenue, which was a good mile from our house and pretty urban, and she's by my car and I don't know what to do with her. So I called my husband. I said, you've got to go find Lucy. She's out there on Piedmont Avenue, and this was about 11:30. And while I was on the phone with him, another call came through, and it was somebody about a block away that had Lucy, and she made it home. My husband went and grabbed her and brought her home.
Another happy ending. Thank you for that.
Yeah, another sort of rudimentary GPS, just simply have people call you. Yeah, it brings up actually an interesting question about indoor versus outdoor cats.
Yeah, I'm looking at an email that's very serious on that question.
Yeah, no, people are serious, and I completely understand their concerns.
Do I hear the email?
Sure.
Listener writes, cats kill billions of birds and mammals every year, according to scientists from the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute and the Fish and Wildlife Service, and featured in the New York Times. As the environmentally responsible owner of an indoor cat, I must offer constructive criticism of outdoor cat owners. Allowing your cat to roam outdoors might be emotionally satisfying for you, but it is not good for those billions of wild birds and small mammals, many of which are endangered species. Ultimately, it's not healthy for cats either. Let fly the emotion of outdoor cat activists.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely hear what you're saying. I think there
a lot of these are feral cats, though. I mean,
that's what I think, that spaying cats and the feral cat issue, not buying cats, adopting cats. I mean, I'm not trying to dodge this issue. I know that my cats, if you asked my cats what would make them happy, like super happy, like become real cats, it's because they want to be outside. We all do. I mean, the other issue is it's safer for cats, and that's true too. But, you know, the truth is it's safer for all of us if we stay inside all the time. And of course, that's not a real life.
It is complicated because there's the issue of invasive, species and killing the birds and such. And so, I mean, we understand both sides. I think this has brought up a really interesting debate that if you go online, is very loud. We've gotten a lot of responses about it. So it's good that people are talking about it.
It is good. It's really good. I mean, we do put a bell on our collars, but they say that cats can outdo that bell. And we actually change the collars so the bell's different.
We do everything we can to be responsible outdoor cat owners, if that's possible.
Well, when you said, what would make my cat really happy, I thought you were going to say tuna.
Tuna too, yeah.
A lot of questions from listeners coming in, but this is one that kind of put things together here. Jim from Woodland wants to know, had any firefighter experience with cats, like rescuing from a tree?
I actually used to rescue them a lot from burning houses. And At one point, they used to make fun of me and call me Dr. Doolittle. But I had always had, I mean, I've loved animals. And so I'm not the only one in the fire department that loves animals by any means. And those of us who had a special eye out for them would look for food bowls when we were crawling through. And I would take animals and put them in my coat and take them out. And it was amazing because you'd think cats would run from you. But when it's, they seem to know that you're there to save them, even though you look at the time like the scariest thing imaginable, breathing through your rebreather like Darth Vader. And I've approached many of the cats thinking sort of cat thoughts in the middle of a smoky, smoky room, thinking, please don't run from me. And they don't.
But that's another thing about the enigma of their behavior. I mean, you know, it's so fascinating to me when I think about it, how cats will they'll know, and dogs too, in a different way. They'll know if you like them. They'll know if you don't like them. They'll know if you're afraid of them or you're not afraid of them. My brother, at one point, was dating a woman from Texas, and we had a cat named Katrina. And this cat had never shown any hostility toward anybody. This is a cat that came down and died and said goodbye. And was screeching at this woman. I don't know what it was. You know, my brother said, "Well, cat got it right." Well, that was much later. People are asking, what did you learn about your neighbors through your cat?
Well, that was interesting because we did start to figure out where our cat was going using technology, and then without giving too much away, realized that, you know, actually talking to one's neighbors is a great thing to do that we don't do so much of anymore. And I think, you know, Caroline's been living in the neighborhood where we live for about 20 years or so. And I've been there now about 5, and we didn't really know our neighbors much at all. But through the process, we met everybody, made friends, created a real community that wasn't there before.
And they were there for you, so to speak. They really wanted to help you find your cat.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when you say, you show them a pet cat picture, and they're like, cute, and it just breaks all boundaries. But really, I mean, it was amazing to think that Tibby knew my neighbors better than I did. I mean, he knew everything about them. It was also kind of amazing that no one had ever seen him. And yet our GPS maps show that he went through everybody's yard. So, but I think really Tibby got me out in the world, but he also got sort of me out back in my neighborhood. And I had been there for so long. And it was, I thought of myself as a good neighbor, and I realized that Tibby's actually a better neighbor.
And I think a lot of us in San Francisco who live on hills sometimes, you know, who might drive, we end up going in and going into our garages, and then we don't really walk up and down our hills like, you know, people who hang out on stoops and such when you're living on flatland or in New York or something like that. So maybe this got us actually walking around on our San Francisco hills more than we did before.
Oh, good exercise. Donna, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We had a cat named Pandora who lived with us for 18 years, and she loved the car. And if you were unloading groceries or packing the car to go on a trip or whatever, she would get in the car. And I never understood her fascination with it. But one morning, my husband was making a couple of trips to the car on the way to work, and the cat, we surmised the cat got in the car, and he drove to BART, left the car at BART, did not know the cat was in the car, didn't think the cat was in the car, and the car was stolen from BART.
Oh, no.
And Pandora showed up about a week and a half later, skinny as could be and bedraggled, but she had never left home before that. And the only thing we could think was that she had gotten in the car and, you know, I think she rested on the floorboard because it was warm. I have no idea, but that's the only time she ever left home. And the coincidence of the car being stolen, you know, paired with her fascination for the car was just too strong a connection for us to ignore.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. What's amazing is that your cat found her way home.
Yeah, that's the amazing story.
Exactly.
Yes.
Donna, thank you for that. Did you find more of Pandora's interest in cars after she returned home? I mean, did she...
She stayed in a lot more after that.
Oh, okay. I thought she's going to start hanging around car lots or something.
Yeah, no, I think once burned, twice shy for Pandora. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that story. I appreciate it. Some questions from listeners. A listener asks, what are Wendy's favorite things to draw? What's her process? How long does each illustration take, and what does she use to draw?
Wow. Pen and watercolor. I'm going backwards. And I love drawing people. I love drawing environments. I like to spend time in a place and get to know it and observe and draw the little details that maybe you might not notice if you're familiar with an environment, and really notice the details and pull those out. I've done drawings of places, like you mentioned before, the San Francisco Public Library, of 5th and 6th Street in San Francisco, the Dolphin Club, places like that. And I like talking to people, too, and using their words in my pictures and putting them together to tell a story.
You're getting lots of questions here, by the way. I mean, there's lots of stuff about cats, but let me give you a few more examples. Can Wendy talk about her pen and ink project? How did it come about, and what are some of the memorable tattoos she's seen?
Oh, yeah, that's really fun. I'm working with Isaac Fitzgerald, who's the editor of The Rumpus, and he is a great guy. He and I are gathering tattoos and the stories behind them. So people who choose to get a tattoo on their body, oftentimes there's an incredible story that's led up to making that very permanent decision. But people don't really get the opportunity to talk about them and tell them. So we gather those stories, and then I illustrate them, and Isaac works with the person who bears the tattoo to tell a story. And so it's a first person collection of those tattoos, and we're making it into a book, actually, that's going to be coming out in 2014 from Bloomsbury.
Sounds like a natural for a book. Yeah. Here's Francis in Sonoma County, who says, fun program. Cats are a passion and a mystery. When I was a child, my parents had a vacation home in South Tahoe. The former owners had two Siamese that returned to the house each summer for a few years. The owners called us to be sure that they were at our home, and then they would leave to go back to their owners. I don't remember how long this lasted, but it was fascinating. Thank you for honoring our love of cats. Let me go to another caller here, and that's Paul in Antioch. Paul, hi.
Hi. I was just calling saying that I disagree with the saying that, you know, men that like cats don't have a game. I have two dogs and two cats, and I think they're wonderful, because when you give affection to a cat, it responds to how much love that you give the creature. You know, and it's very loving animal. So, and also, I have four kittens that.
Paul, they get along okay? Your cats and your dogs?
Yeah, they get along very well. They're my two dogs. I have a Siberian Husky and a Pitbull Husky, and the two cats get along. They don't hurt each other. Sometimes they chase a little, you know, when they get a little grouchy. But they love each other, and that's the good thing about cats is how loving they are.
And they love the dogs, and the dogs love them?
No, yeah, they don't.
So you're surrounded by love. What a lucky man you are. Thank you for that call. And we had another caller on from Pengrove. Richard, hi, you're on.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for the show. Well, ladies, I have this cat story that involves fire and cats. And in the early 90s, I was the lucky first person to come across a residential house, a classic house in Brantford, Connecticut, 300-year-old house on fire. The house was burning. The people inside didn't know, because it was happening in the attic and it was coming out the top. Anyway, got inside and warned the woman to come out. Her kids, who were out front waiting for the bus because it's early morning, that no one had noticed the house was on fire. I was driving by. Anyway, so got them out. Their cat was at a window, which was like an 8/8 pane. I broke out the window, got the cat out. This is a mother cat. And then one of the kids came over and said, you know, sir, the cat has kittens. The cat has kittens in the house. So it was engulfed and smoke-filled by this time. The terrific fire people who came went in. I told them, I grabbed one of them, I said, look, I know it's, you know, not the end of the world, but the kids said, there's kittens in the closet in that room. I pointed to the room. The fireman brought out the kittens, just like you talked about, in his coat, came out and gave them to me and another firefighter, and we started to give them mouth-to-face respiration. Wow. These are very tiny kittens, and all of the kittens wound up making it. Okay, so fast forward 2 years, my wife is where we moved 100 miles the other side of Connecticut. My wife's working a temporary job in a law office, and the woman next to her has a, we had a cat, and the woman next to her has a picture of her cat up on the board, and she said, oh, that's your cat. How nice. And she said, yeah, we call it Smokey. And she said, it's called Smokey because it survived the fire in Brantford. And it turns out it was one of the cats that I had helped rescue at the
That's amazing.
That day.
Well, first of all, you're a hero, Paul. You can be on my crew any day.
Oh, what a story, though. I mean, just...
Wow.
Yeah. There's so much more and so many more details, but I didn't want to take too much time. Anyway,
no, you told it very well. I mean, you had us all on our edge of our seats here.
Well, it's just you know, the chances of all that coming together and the chances of those four kittens making it, and it was just a beautiful experience. I was so proud to be part of it, and those incredible fire people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing story, Paul. Thank you so much for that. I used to have a cat named Duke, and I would talk to Duke, and Duke would move his head back and forth, you know, and it was like having a conversation. But the amazing thing about his behavior was he would go up to a faucet and drink out of the faucet. If there's any drop coming out, I guess it's a standard cat behavior. But I mean, the first time I saw it, I was amazed and frankly kind of shocked, you know, just with that mouth all over the faucet and just drinking drop by drop.
Well, people teach their cats to use the toilet.
I know. In fact, I remember somebody I knew had an ocelot, and you actually trained it to use a toilet, a pet ocelot.
Well, cats are actually really smart. I think they're given short shrift, first of all, on their emotional capacity, because physically they don't have as many facial muscles in their face as, for instance, dogs do. So you get the sense that they're removed, but I don't think they are.
We were talking about the psychic before. I should mention there was a cat psychic, too, that you... Right.
She's actually a normal psychic, but she can tune into cats, too. There are a lot of pet psychics around, though, and lots of stories.
Well, Frank wants to know, what is a cheap GPS brand I can use to track my cat, and where can I get one? Practical question.
You know, the one we used was developed by a man in his garage, and we have links. We have a website called lostcatbook.com, and there's a whole page where we've gathered information about GPS and cameras and technologies that people can use. So I think that's a good resource.
Yeah, go there. We actually have – we've even advanced to using drones to follow our cats.
Lizzie asks, is it difficult for them to work together? How do they separate their artist selves and their relationship selves?
Good question.
Are you taking the Fifth Amendment here?
I think, you know, it was a good process. We both really do love and respect each other's work. And so that was a pretty necessary ingredient for working together. But it was interesting in the process of working together that the making of this book kind of did become a metaphor for our relationship in a way. So I would.
Well, it sounds like you built even, to use the word bridges again, stronger bridges. I mean, you became a cat lover of some sort. So.
I did. Yeah. I mean, we did go through a lot through the events that are in the book. And then the making of the book in itself was an entirely different adventure, too.
Yeah, well, it isn't a normal writer. I had never collaborated before on a project. So I initially thought, I'll just write the whole thing, give it to my illustrator, and she'll draw it. But, of course, we are in a relationship, so we're not just the normal writer-illustrator relationship. And what you find out is that the work itself sort of becomes a stand-in for the relationship. So I would hand her something that I was so proud of, and when she wouldn't get back to me immediately...
Within like 30 seconds.
Yeah,
right?
It would become clear that she didn't love me anymore.
Which wasn't actually the case. But we got a rhythm going, and we ended up having a real back and forth in the making of the book. Caroline would hand me, you know, some pages, and then I would draw, and then she would riff off of that. And so it did end up becoming, as a good relationship is, kind of a 50-50 thing. And the book is about half illustrations. On almost every spread, there's a drawing. So
Caroline just needs affirmation. We've already established that fact, obviously.
We all do.
I mean, yeah.
When the cat goes off
leave?
And she feels yeah. abandoned, and my cat abandoned me, and why did my cat do that to me? Here's a listener named Christina. Says, just wondering if the authors know about the wonderful illustrated children's book, Six Dinner Sid. It's about a cat who is owned by six different families and becomes a different cat with each of them. They find out and tell him that he can only have one cat and one dinner, so he moves to another street and finds a new group of six owners.
That's great.
I love that.
I have not.
No.
But thank you for telling us
about
that.
We'll go check it out.
Here's another warning about outdoor cats. They're vulnerable to all kinds of dangers. They're not equipped to deal with an urban or even suburban environment. I think that's certainly something to take under wraps. And let me get to another caller here, and that's you. Lisa, good morning.
Yeah, hi. I actually just lost my cat last month.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. He grew up with my dog and acted very dog-like. But when he was younger, he would follow us for blocks when we go for walks. And sometimes he'd get lost, but he'd always end up coming back home. And I used to get phone calls frequently because he'd wear a little tag with my phone number on it. And people would just call me and say, you know, he was in their bed. He had just come into their apartment and was sleeping in their room. And he would visit other people's houses. And I sometimes got calls from people asking if I'd lost my cat because he'd go and sleep on their patio every day in the sun. And it, you know, even people calling from right outside our apartment saying, this cat just walked right up to me. Is he lost? But he was super friendly and very crazy and drove me crazy. But, you know, we miss him. And I just think it's funny because he also drank out of the faucet, and that drove me nuts. He would not drink water out of a bowl. He would yowl at me until I turned the faucet on. So
I hope you find him, Lisa. Good luck. He may find his way home, as many of them do.
Yeah, he passed away. I think that he's in the big home in the sky.
Oh, I got the sense that he was lost when she said he was lost. He, like your cat, was lost.
He passed away. But to
he still
to
may come back
point,
in another transmigration
form.
Of
yes,
soul.
Yes, exactly. But to Lisa's point, I think microchipping these days is really, we found that through all the anecdotes people tell us, that the reason, one of the biggest reason that cats are reunited with their owners is through microchips.
Sorry for your loss, Lisa, and sorry about my tripping up on that. Here's Zoe, who says, my cousin found a young cat that was all mangy looking, and they took him in and cared for him, and he got healthy and started roaming again, but would return every night. Then a few years later, he went missing for 3 or 4 days, and then they put up missing signs in their neighborhood. They were just desperate to find him soon because they were moving several hours away. They got a hostile call saying, this is our cat, not yours, and he is at our house. The next night, the cat was back. A few days later, they packed everything up and catnapped Catface. I had mixed moral feelings about this, but he was a bloody cute cat.
Wow.
Wow, that's right. Another caller, and that's Afton. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I was just thinking that this story that you guys are talking about sounds so much like a Hikaru Murakami book. And I don't know if you know that author, but he always has some sort of like subplot with a cat that's either gone missing or a cat that has its own little trajectory throughout the book. And the cat seems to represent something like the sort of like enigmatic mystery of life. And it's kind of interesting because that seems like what you were dealing with after your accident and how you sought to find your cat was almost like an answer to.
Well, Caroline had said earlier that this is like human relationships. You made that analogy. Did you see this as a kind of parable or instructive story as far as human relationships, too?
Yeah. I mean,
from the beginning?
This should really be titled Lost Humans because it is about the way we, you know, implicit in every sort of love is the possibility of loss. And we do it anyway. You know, we give our hearts away anyway. But I think that's what the story is about. And this need to control that love. And you know everything about the other person or creature.
Talking with Caroline Paul and Wendy McNaughton, author and illustrator of Lost Cat, a true story of love, desperation, and GPS technology. And our next caller is from Ashland, Oregon. David, welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Enjoying the show. I don't know if you've spoken about it already, but PBS Online Film Festival has a show called Cat Camp. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, so if you go on pbs.org, Film Festival, and search under the word cat cam, it's a film about a cat that constantly disappears from his home, and the family wants to know where it's going. So they attach a little camera to the collar. And it's great. It's really a loving film about a cat and how it's endeared itself around the neighborhood.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, thank you for that, David. We're getting all kinds of recommendations here. I mean, one can spend a lifetime studying cats and reading and going through the literature and the films. And Vern is our next caller. Vern, hi.
Yes, I'm on the air.
You're on the air.
We had a neighbor way back in the 50s, and they had a Manx or minx, whatever it's called, very, very weird-looking cat. And he got on his owner's chest one night, and the father of the family woke up. His cat jumped out the window, and he smelled gas.
Wow.
And so the gas leak was found because of the cat.
Because of the cat, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Right. Down the street, we had another weird cat. He was not a very big cat or anything, very loving around the house, but no big dog in the neighborhood would walk down that street. He would run out of that. German Shepherds, anything. No dog would walk down that street.
Huh.
I won't even talk about my Siamese. Too crazy. Bye. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
No such thing as too crazy when you're talking about cats to cat people.
Well, here's a question for Wendy about your illustrations that keep pouring in here. What have you learned about San Francisco through your drawings of its residents and the various maps of the city?
Oh, that's a big question.
It is a big question.
Yeah.
Right off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, personally, for me, that there are so many different communities and sub-communities and groups of people. And I'm so lucky because of the work that I do to be able to enter into them for a short period of time and get to know people. And the city has, I would say it's pretty divided up in a lot of ways. But each community has such depth and history and stories behind it that I think that they all should be shared.
And you want more, huh? You're hungry for more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Always.
Again, the new book, Lost Cat, A True Story of Love, Desperation, and GPS Technology. Caroline Paul, the author, and Wendy McNaughton, the illustrator. And a lot of fun having you both on here. What's next? Projects?
Well,
you talk about the tattoo. That's coming up?
Yeah, the tattoo book. The stories, the San Francisco stories, is being made into a book, San Francisco in Its Own Words, by Chronicle Books. We have a piece that we do together every couple weeks about kind of lifestyle technology for Dell Tech Page One.
That's fun. Yeah, every 2 weeks we talk about the intersection of life and technology.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why we're
cats all the time, we promise. And also in October, I have a book coming out with a man named Richard Betts called It's the First Ever Scratch and Sniff Guide to Wine.
Wow. You two have great imaginations, and it's been real fun having you both on. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
It's great to be here.
We're here Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. And by the way, you can continue this discussion about cats on our website, kqed.org/forum, or post whatever you like on there. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.